Good evening. I wanted to do something for National Storytelling Week, so I'm going to tell you a story over several nights. This story was developed with the Burngreave Renewal Project near Sheffield, where I live. And there are contributions from various schools in the area. And we wrote a story that we wanted to become a legend for Sheffield. And within that story is contained also folk tales that you will all know and love as well. So sit back and enjoy Hartwood. Part 1. The king loved to hunt. They say in the City of Silver there was a kind of magic in the air. Everyone had enough to eat, and I'll tell you about that later. Everyone's needs were met, so they had forgotten how to dream, how to hope, how to persevere. In the City of Silver there were great forests and moss-covered landscapes, and I shall tell you why. Because they say the king, he married one of the fae folk, a woman of outstanding beauty, and she had given up the chance to live forever in the wild lands to become his queen. She blessed him so that whenever he went hunting, it didn't matter if he brought back the smallest hare or the largest buck, there was always enough to feed everyone in the city. And they were generous, and every night there was cooking and food and laughter. The king would go out hunting with his favourite hawk and his hound and his best steed. And when the king rode out from the castle in that greatly wooded kingdom, the queen would go to the top of the tallest tower and she would take out her knitting. And she would knit. Oh, but she didn't just knit anything. She knitted moss, great green moss. And at the end of the day, when the sun was setting on the horizon, she would cast off as her husband, the king, would burst through out of the forest with his three faithful companions, the hawk, the hound, and the horse. And she would fling that moss upon the air, and the winds would carry it where it would caress the earth. And if you visit Sheffield, you can still find those mossy, mossy woods. And then there would be a feast. And then there would be dancing and laughter and sleep. The king and the queen had three wonderful sons. The eldest, well, he was like all sons that are the eldest. He thought everybody should listen to him. And he couldn't understand why nobody did. And sometimes he would have really good ideas and they would listen, and other times they would not. And he would say, "Do you know what? I might just as well be invisible." And the queen would put her head in her hands and the king would sigh and they would smile at each other and go, "Youth." That was his biggest weakness, really. That when he had an idea and no one listened, he thought he might just as well be invisible. And we all know that's not true. The middle son. Well, I don't know if any of you are middle children out there, but the middle son was so changeable. He was like the sun going in and out of a cloud. He could wake up in the brightest, happiest of moods, laughing, joking, teasing the servants, and then, in an instant, he would be grumpy and sullen and cruel almost. And the king and the queen would look at each other, and the king would shrug, and the queen would nod, and they say, "'Tis the way with middle children. They are changeable." It was, they felt, his greatest weakness. Their youngest son had never been listened to, so it didn't really worry him. He just spoke louder. If he was changeable, nobody noticed. There was always so much going on. No, his thing, if you like, was he didn't know when to stop. And the thing that he loved the most was his little recorder, his little pipe. He would play it every morning, every afternoon, every evening. And do you think he played it well? No, he didn't. He played it with the lilting dexterity of a parking meter. He played it so badly, hit so many rough notes, that even the creatures in the forest would stuff their little furry paws into their ears in an effort not to hear the noise. And that child was resistant to looks, pleading or otherwise, entreaties for him to stop. He didn't know when to. And the king and the queen would laugh and smile and nod and sigh and say, "'Tis the way sometimes with the youngest.' They don't know when to stop. Maybe we have indulged him too much. They felt maybe it was his greatest weakness. And I ask you, do you think those three brothers got on well? Well, I suppose deep down they did, for they loved each other, but there was always arguing, with the eldest telling them what to do and nobody else listening, and him saying, "Ha! I might just as well be invisible." And the middle one, who had woken up happy, telling jokes and laughing, going, "Well, I'm not going to stand here and listen to this," and stomp off. And the youngest going, "Let me play you a tune." And everyone else going, "No, no, please." But despite all this, it was a happy place to be. Now, it happened one day that the king went off hunting on his horse with his favourite hound and his hawk. And the queen did what she always did. She took her knitting and she went to the top of the tallest tower and she began to knit through the day. When the sun was beginning to set, she was just preparing to cast off. She looked at the horizon, waiting for the familiar rustle of the trees as her husband would burst forth, triumphant with one catch or the other. But he didn't. The king never returned. With a sinking feeling in her heart, she continued to knit. She could not cast off till the king was home. The king did not come home that night, nor the next, nor the next, nor the next. And her three sons entreated her to come down, seek the warmth of the fire, but she would not, to eat a little, but she would not, to drink a little, and she did a little, but she would take no nourishment. They said it was only the fact that she was and had once been one of the Fae, that she did not die altogether. And the knitting and the moss began to cover the top of that tower. But the king never returned. One day, she heard a noise at the edge of the forest. She looked up, and bursting out of the forest came the king's great hunting hawk. Oh, so wounded, he made it to the edge of that great tower and dropped at her feet. She called the royal falconer, and they could see a great gash in the bird's wing, and she said, "Take this creature and care for it the way the king would have wanted you to." And that creature, exhausted and wounded, was taken away, but it could not tell its story. And still she knitted, and her eldest son came up and said, "Mother, please listen to me." For now, so many days had passed that they stretched into weeks, and he said, "Please, the kingdom must continue," and he tried to make her listen, but she would not. And he stomped off full of anger and rage. "Nobody listens to me," he said, "I might just as well be invisible. It is my greatest weakness." A few weeks later, when the queen was knitting and the moss had covered almost the top of the tower, she noticed a rustling at the edge of the forest, and out of the forest burst the king's great hunting hound. He came to the foot of the tower, threw back his head, and threw foam-flecked mouse threw back his head and howled a howl that would chill your spine. The queen called the royal keeper of the hounds, and the royal keeper of the hounds noted that the animal was footsore and blistered, and its fur was patched and torn, and it had gone through something, some great misfortune, but it could not tell its story. And the middle son would go up and say, bright as morning, Mother, please cheer up. Let me tell you a story. Let me sing you a song. Let me tell you a joke. And he would tell the worst jokes in the world. What's brown and sticky? A stick. Why did the chicken cross the road? Because it did. Which came first, the chicken and the egg? And the queen pointed out that wasn't really a joke, more of a statement that nobody knew the answer to. And where she had been indulgent before, she had no patience. And so he changed, and he stormed off under like a thundercloud of fury. And the queen carried on knitting, and the middle son regretted his outburst. I am so changeable, he said. It is my biggest weakness. And now the months stretched, almost a half a year. Still the queen knitted, until people had to move out of that bit of the tower because the moss was beginning to flow down the walls. She looked up, and there, bursting out of the forest, came the king's great steed, his great horse. It was wild-eyed. You could see its ribs. It had obviously been lost for so long. A great gash down its side. Wounded, infested. She called the royal grooms, and they caught the terrified creature on the outskirts of the forest. Wild-eyed it was led. The queen could not tear herself away from the tower or the moss or her view, but she called down to them to tend that horse as the king would have wanted it. But the horse could not tell its story. And the youngest son went up and said, Mother, I have just the thing, music. And although the queen groaned inwardly, she just didn't have the strength. He played and played and played until the servants dragged him away. And when he saw the look on his mother's face, he, I could kick myself, he thought. I just don't know when to stop. I fear it's my biggest weakness. That night, the three princes from the City of Silver, for that is the city's name, sat down for the first time by the fire after supper and discussed not how to save their father, that thought was long gone, but how to save their mother, who would surely become part of the forest and disappear forever if she continued with her grieving. And that is the end of part one of Heartwood. Tune in tomorrow night for part two.